This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 87 of What's It Like. My guest is Farnoosh Brock. Somewhere in New York?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Well, I got that one really wrong. But right time zone. So did you grow up in that area?
No, I grew up in Iran.
Oh, you're a long way from home.
Yes, yes. Well, this is home now, but I was born and raised in Tehran, Iran, which is in the Middle East, as you may know. But I live in the U.S. now, so.
Did you come from a large family?
I have two brothers, no sisters, and of course my parents, and a lot of cousins. So I don't think it's large. There are some much larger families, but I definitely wasn't the only child either. So somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. So who had the biggest influence on you growing up?
Let's see. So I think back to Iran a lot. And the older you grow, I think, the more you look back at your childhood, especially if you can't go back to your home. And I've never been back since we left in the 1980s. So I look back and I think a lot of people in my family had a lot of influence on me. I know that my grandfathers, both of them, and they both were gone, unfortunately, when I was young. But I remember them enough to remember their influence, their love of math and science and, you know, education. Education is a big thing in the Iranian culture, and especially on both sides of my family, mom and dad. And my grandmother. My mom's side, maternal grandmother, huge influence. I'm just in love with her, you know, just she's amazing. And of course, my parents, you know, whether I like it or not, they had an influence on me. So.
What was your major challenge as a child?
As a child, well, I guess when the Iranian Revolution happened and I was very young, and then a few years later, there was war. So not fun things, but I think when the oppression and the oppressive regime came over and we had to, cover up when we went to school as little girls, and they separated the girls and the boys' schools. And there were really, really, really fundamentalist people who had a very strict regimen in schools, and things that you would consider absolutely insane if they happened in the schools in America, you know. And the good thing was I formed these amazing friendships. So over there, you know, kids aren't mean to each other. They kind of protect each other and they love each other because the school system is mean to them. You know, it's a different world. And I formed some great friendships there, but that was really hard for us to really adapt to that, and also to see our parents adapt to the changes that were happening to their lives as, you know, the government took over. I mean, people are probably not familiar as they are, let's say, with what happened in Russia and other places, but, you know, just imagine kind of like losing everything you have, or your money and your savings not having any value because you're, you know, just the way the economy works out. And it's not fun, but I think they had a harder part. For me, it was just watching them, watching the changes that I didn't understand as a child, right? And then the move. We moved to Turkey first for a two-week vacation. And then my dad decided we're never going back. So I left everything behind, you know, my dog, my friends, my school, my grandmother. And that was hard. And my mom didn't take it too well. And so we started from nothing, you know, probably heavier answers than you were hoping for, right?
No, not at all. Life is what it is.
Yeah.
So yeah. How old were you when this went on?
So when the Iranian Revolution, I was 5 years old. We left Iran when I was 11. We went to Turkey, and then we came to the U.S. 3 years later. So we lived in Turkey 3 years instead of a two-week vacation. And then we found our way here. My dad and my parents had spent some time, a lot of time actually, in the U.S. when they were younger. So they really wanted to come back, and they had family here. And, you know, this Iran was just no place to live and have a future. So we came here. So I went to high school in the U.S., and that was its own little shock.
Mm. What right? was that like?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think more than anything, the nonchalance or the indifference of American teenagers, you know, like in Iran, you respect your elders, you respect your parents, your teachers. And then here, you know, first of all, there was no uniforms. I had to wear uniforms all the time. There was a lot of freedom. There was a lot of, you know, it was a very different attitude. I could not relate to it. It was a completely different frequency. And I had a very hard time making friends. Very, very hard time. Hmm. So just your regular good old culture shock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I learned a lot. I look back and I wouldn't change anything. I'm sure most of us, you know, at the time that it's happening, you want everything you don't have. But you look back at your life and you're like, huh, that was pretty interesting. Right. So.
What did you do after high school?
After high school, of course, I had to go to college, right? And I had to study something really intellectual. So my dad recommended that if I study electrical engineering, after that, I can do anything. So, I mean, I remember, Ken, I was in tears when I was a sophomore and I called him. I'm like, I'm done. I'm quitting. He's like, no, give it one more semester. One more semester. And I finished and then I went to graduate school. In electrical engineering, and I finished that, and I wrote a thesis, and I finished that. So, you know, I had a lot of pride in the education that I was going to get because I associated that with success. I mean, that's mm-hmm. how I was grown up. That's how I grew up. And I think very differently now because, you know, I'm self-employed and it's a different world, but I still think education has a good place. It's just a good investment, even if you don't end up practicing what you study. You really go through a process. You learn things. You can take them with you. You can change its form and apply it differently. So, so for the next 4 years and then 2 more years, for the next 6 years, I was studying. I was really, really, really hardcore student, not a lot of fun, you know. I found it to be very hard. I don't know for other people, but electrical engineering was no picnic. So that's pretty much what I was doing. And then I decided I'm not going to get a PhD. I put my foot down finally. I'm like, no, that's enough. No more. So then I went and I got a job at a startup company. And it was at a time where the internet boom was happening. And, you know, it was fun. But then I jumped over to a much bigger company. It was a big, huge technology company that's actually based out of California. But they had a location here, a huge location here. So I went and started working for them. And I was there for a number of years. So that was also interesting, the world of corporate America. So that was its own lessons and challenges.
How did you decide to go to work for yourself?
For myself? I decided a few years ago that I'm unhappy, right? I decided that the things that I thought were going to make me happy, which was climbing the corporate ladder and becoming this senior vice president or executive president or whatever fancy title I was dreaming of, that was just not going to bring me fulfillment and happiness. And also it wasn't happening. I was running into a lot of stumbling blocks and I knew somewhere that I am very smart, right? I've actually not had a lot of problems with self-confidence. So I hope that doesn't come across as arrogant, but, you know, you feel like, okay, you have gifts, you have talents, and something's just not working out. And I just refused to blame myself. So I was like, it's obviously not me. I am meant to do great things with my life, and one way or another, I'm going to do them. I don't care if I'm 80 years old, if it takes me that long, I'm going to do them. So this was a few years before I quit my job, because the other thing that I will admit to you is that I liked my income. You know, I made 6 figures working from home, not doing a lot of work, having a lot of freedom and flexibility, and going on international trips once in a while on company pay. So it was good, but it was very unfulfilling. There was a lot of politics, and I was getting tired of it. And so I just turned my attention to other things, you know, hobbies and activities and dancing and traveling and vacations and all these other things to just really fill my mind, but I wasn't challenged. So this kept going on, and I moved around all the time. I got all kinds of jobs in corporate doing all kinds of different things. And I would be satisfied here and there, but not really. So then I started my blog. In 2008, I started writing, but 2009, really, I started Prolific Living, which is my blog. And I loved it. I loved it. It was just a hobby. It was just something for fun. It was just a different world where you actually write something and people read it, you impact people's lives, you make friends, it's online communities, all that. So, and then nothing much was happening. There was no way I was going to leave my job. But then I started learning about people who actually make money working for themselves, and they don't have to go and set up shop, right? You know, because the thing that scared me about self-employment is the loneliness of it. I always imagine these mom and pop shops, and I support small businesses fiercely, but I would just imagine them being just so lonely. And in the corporate world, there is 40,000 people you can talk to, right? So even if you're working from home. But then the world of digital online business and just being, you know, able to communicate with people through social media, that started to open up to me, and it started to really be interesting. You know, I still wasn't going to give up everything, you know, everything, all the benefits that I had, all the money I was making. But in 2010, things started happening with my blog. It started just gaining momentum and picking up on traffic, and when I started, you know, getting ideas on products I could start and partnerships and collaboration, and I started writing guest posts for other blogs, and it was just a lot of things were happening, and everything I tried, it just worked. It's like, you know, you see how some people, whatever they touch turns into gold, right? There's an expression, I think maybe it's a Persian expression, but basically it was working so well, and the absolute opposite was happening in my job. Nothing was working up, just nothing. So I started getting more and more obsessed. And then, and I'm still answering your question, don't worry, I went to Blog World in Las Vegas in 2010, right? It was about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I went there just thinking, okay, I got to make my blogging a little more serious. My husband said, you have to go to this conference and make something of this. But he was not anywhere ready to have me quit on him. So then, somewhere there, I remember listening to the story of one of the bloggers who said he decided to turn his hobby into profit, to turn it into a business. I think he used the word business. And it's just one day he just woke up and he decided to do that. And I just remembered all those things I used to think about myself, that I'm capable, that I'm talented, I'm intelligent, I have gifts. And it just all came back. And I remember running back to the hotel and saying to my husband, I'm going to do this. I'm going to quit. And he nearly had a heart attack. He's like, oh, my God, no, let's go home now. Bad idea. So that was November 2010. I came home and I set goals for myself. I started email marketing, my email marketing campaign. I started writing books, creating products. And between then and March 2011, I basically like doubled what has been happening in prolific living, you know, in terms of traffic and attention and everything. And I still had no intention of quitting. We were just playing with the idea. And then in my corporate life, they put me on this terrible project, just really something that went completely against my work ethics and my values. And I had done some of that because you just do whatever the work is. But this one was really over the top. So I asked them to move me to another project. This was a waste of my time and company's time. And they said no. And I said, I'm done, you know? So I wasn't going to compromise my integrity anymore. So it happened over the course of a few weeks, and we prepared for it. You know, my husband and I really prepared for it. And I think it was the best decision that I ever made, because I think, you know, once you leave a very toxic environment and you really, really start to free your mind and open space in your mind to think about who you are, first of all, and what kind of person you want to become, and what kind of things you want to offer the world. I mean, there is no going back. I mean, everything from that kind of life starts to look so foreign to you. So then that's it. I started to work for myself, and I think I was born to do this. I should have started when I was 5, but oh well.
So before you began making products,
yeah.
What level of traffic did you have on your site?
So my first product, which actually didn't do that well, it's still, you know, my most beautiful product, my big travel guide, but that came out April. So April 2011, which is exactly a year ago. How much was my traffic? You know, like right now, it is around close to the 45,000 per month, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's uniques. I think it's total traffic. I don't really follow the statistics too much. My younger brother works for me, so he does that. But I would say it has at least tripled. But to answer your question, when I started the products, I didn't start it thinking I have traffic and I can sell. So I have a different mindset, which is different from bloggers if you talk to them, because they measure their size of their target traffic, their target market, by the size of their readers, maybe some random traffic, maybe social media, and also their email list. Email list is a big one, right? And to me, I told you I'm confident, right? I think whatever I create, the whole world is my market. Like, assuming they want that product, right? There is so many different platforms you can put your product out there that my blog is just a starting point, right? So I didn't think of it that way. But I've also learned a lot. I mean, I still am learning about what it is that it takes to, create and market products. But if you're asking what was my traffic before I started creating products, that was not my decision point. I just decided I want to create products. So it's a little different. And also bloggers will tell you that you need to create whatever your readers want. And with my first product, I created what I thought is my gift, my expertise. You know, I created a product that helps people overcome fears and anxieties of traveling. Because I meet that all the time. You know, people tell me, I wish I could travel like you. Right. Well, you can, and it's a lot of fears and anxiety that holds people back. So it just breaks it down. So it's not a travel guide like go see the Eiffel Tower and then go have a cup of coffee. So that was my first product, and I wanted to write that. I wanted to create that. So I did a couple of surveys, but that's just I just went about it differently, and I've learned a lot about creating products and services and programs since then. But I hope that answers your question in terms of traffic.
Oh, yeah. I was just trying to get a feeling for how you went through the process. So would you consider yourself more of a writer?
So I do. I write a lot. I write books. I create programs that have a lot of writing. I write my blog. I write a ton of guest posts. I go through phases when I'm creating the products. Maybe I go slow down on the guest posts. And I definitely have published books. You know, I've put them on the Kindle store and other places. So I consider myself a writer to a great extent, but that's not all I do. I would like to think that now I have established brand and it has products and services and programs around the brand Prolific Living, which talks about smart habits for rich living, you know, and it has different pillars. I have a health pillar. I have a career section where I really, really help people leave unhappy jobs, such as their corporate jobs. I actually just finished my 6-week course on that, and it went very well. But yes, there is a lot of writing, but I don't like to label myself. So I wouldn't say I'm just a writer,
So what is the best thing about your job?
Everything. I love it. Talking to you right now. I have a coaching client in a few minutes. I was creating a program this morning. You know, I'm talking to my, new friends and peers on social media every minute. I mean, I absolutely love it. It was made for me. And I have created it this way, because I realized I can, right? I mean, the first few months, so I'll tell you this, it hasn't all been rosy. The first few months after I quit my corporate job, I was still pretty happy that I left, and I've never missed a thing. But I was in a little bit of a funk because not everything was working. And I just saw such a limited, had such a limited view of the things I could do. I was thinking, okay, I have my coaching practice, but I don't have any clients. I have my product, but it's not selling. And I have my blog, but I have no advertisers. And I had just such a limited way of thinking about things. And I think it really, really took a lot of mindset, shift of mindset. Like I decided this is going to work. I decided I'm going to be successful. I decided I'm going to try until it works. And I decided I'm going to do things I'm really passionate about. So it was... Because not just, out of the gate, okay, you're going to go and everything is going to work. Maybe I went on a little tangent there, but I just wanted to mention it didn't happen overnight. It really takes a lot of conversations with yourself. You really have to decide you can make this work, and there's no backup plan. I don't believe in backup plans. I mean, nothing will make me go out and get a job. I just don't see what could happen that would make me go and work for someone else, especially for corporate.
Let me turn the question around. What's the worst thing about your job?
Worst thing about self-employment, you know, as much as an engineer that I am and technical and a huge geek, I don't like to do the technical stuff because I want to spend time creating. I love the creation aspect. So I, you know, I told you my younger brother works for me. I still need to help him with some of that. And mainly because he's a genius. Complete genius, but he's visually handicapped. So I have to help him with some of those problems. And it becomes, you know, a little frustrating in that, not that I don't want to help him, but I just don't want to do that stuff. I just don't want to do, for example, some of the scheduling and taking care of little details. I like to do the stuff where my true strengths come through and shine. So there is that stuff. You have to do them. Or you could outsource them, right? Get an assistant. I have a little bit of control over things I want to do, so I'm not quite ready to do that. But sometimes, and then when things don't work, right, you're on your own. All your services, your service providers, when your site goes down, when your email marketing, you know, the service is not there, that's a little frustrating. But it is what it is. I mean, it's part of doing business.
What type of person would be good at your job?
What type of person? You know, I'm not big into personalities. Like, I've never really thought you can limit yourself or what you do based on personality. I think it's really your passions. So I think an introvert could do what I do, maybe less interviews and maybe a different type of coaching program. Like, I really love getting on the phone with my clients or on video calls. But I think anybody can do what I do as long as they are passionate about it. So if they have a passion for creating things, for creating their own brand, for having their voice, for having opinions about things, and for, you know, putting, creating a new path, right? Having a message and a platform to share it. If you have that, and if you have a passion to do it, then I think this is ideal for you. You know, self-employment with content creation and sharing that content with the world in whatever format, I think that's, you know, it's really the best time. We've never had such a time in history where we could do it so easily.
If they wanted to, how would one get a job like yours?
Well, it's not a job, right? So we don't think of it in terms of a job anymore because you work for yourself, right? So it's really entrepreneurship, self-employment, whatever you want to call it. But I don't call it a job. And so you don't have to go get it, right? You just do it. You just create it. You know, you can start tomorrow.
So where do you begin?
Where do you begin, right? And I'm not trying to simplify. I'm just, you know, just a little bit of a difference of concept. Where do you begin? Well, you begin first with the question, what? What are you going to do, right? And why? Why do you want to do it, right? That's where I start with my clients. Why do you want to go and work for yourself, right? There has to be a real reason. It's not to make money. That's not enough because you can go get a job for that, a real job. It's not for, you know, just to become like other people who do it. You have to have a deep reason. So I think you start with why.
Well,
like,
if you came to me. Let's say I want to help people who are afraid of traveling.
Okay. Okay, perfect. So you have a passion, and then what are you going to do, right? So that's the what, right? You're going to help people with overcoming that, and you want to do it because you're passionate about it. Great. So then you have to choose. I think you have to look at your strengths. Is your strength in writing as a form of communication? Is your strength in talking on video? Is your strength in talking to live audiences, right? You try to figure out some sort of a channel to communicate that message to the world, right? So let's say it's writing, okay? Let's take the route that I took. Let's say you want to write and to do this helping people with their travel fears through writing. So then you need a platform. You can get a number of different platforms. You can, first of all, you can partner with somebody. Let's say you don't want to have your own blog or website. This is something, you know, you don't really hear, but I know that people go and they partner. They partner with somebody who already has a blog, and they write for them regularly. They become a regular writer, right? If you're not big into creating your own platform, or you create your own blog, but you do it on these hosted servers where you don't have to worry about all the technical stuff, like WordPress.com or Blogger. And I don't recommend that, but you can do that. Or you go out and you get your own website, you create a blog, you create, and you start building a community. Mm-hmm. So then you start creating, you start generating content.
And you take, right? A long-term view of it.
Well, you can do whatever. You can do a blog for a month and be done with it. I mean, it depends what you want. It's back to the what. If you want to help people for 3 months and then that's your quote-unquote summer internship for yourself or your experience, yeah. But if you want to, so the real question is, if you want to make money doing this, yes, it's a long-term commitment.
What's a typical day like for you?
Typical day, so I'm doing a challenge right now. So I get up at 4:30 and I meditate and I slowly get going and I make some tea and then I go to my office and I start writing. I do check email. I'm not that great yet. I do check some of the stuff that has come overnight, but then I start writing and it's been working really well for a couple of weeks. And then I go and wake my husband up. You know, we spend a few minutes before he goes to work. So then I just, depends what's on my plate. Sometimes I have an early morning workout. You know, there is a studio I go to where I cycle and do some weightlifting. So that's sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the evenings. And then I try to, you know, schedule things throughout the day, not too many things because sometimes they drain me. And I would have client calls. I would have, actually, I do a lot of interviews, believe it or not. So it's something I really enjoy. So I would have these once a week or so. And then I would do more of my work. You know, I'm like in the middle of launching 2 programs right now. So it's a lot of writing and a lot of also actually putting it out there, editing it and processing it and testing it and putting it in the system and scheduling it. And oh my gosh, I'm getting tired of saying it all, right? Today I've been doing all that. And then I would spend some time with my husband when he comes home. And he actually helps me brainstorm about the business a lot. So I really enjoy that. I do. And depending on the day, you know, either I have a cycling class in the evening or more calls in the evening, or, you know, we spend some time together. And I'm generally working. I mean, I'm working evenings, I'm working weekends, I'm working mornings, and I'm just doing this right now. I'm, you know, on a mission to get a few things done, and I'm very happy. And of course, we do take time to travel. And when we do that pretty seriously. So that's a lot of fun. But I still take the time to work on the road as well. So,
Farnoosh, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Well, you know, I actually wrote a book on motivation, right? I decided that, you know, you don't find motivation outside, right? You can find inspiration, and I have a lot of sources of inspiration, but motivation has to come within. And some days it's just not there. So I don't wait for it to happen. If it's not there, I kind of go with my schedule, right? So as long as I don't give in to my negative mindset, which all of us have, that negative thinking, the doubts, the fears, oh my gosh, what's going to happen if I fail? I have those at bay, but I don't need to be motivated to do my work. But where do I find motivation? I find motivation when I'm taking care of myself. I find motivation when I work out. I find motivation when I feel good about myself. I find motivation when I get emails from my readers that say I have made a difference in their life, or from my students or from my clients when I help them. You know, I find motivation in our conversation here because I really hope that it helps somebody out there, you know, trying to decide what it is they want to do and how to go about it. So lots of different sources, but I think it really, really comes from within. You know, you just, as long as you're aligned to what you want to do and you stay true to your values, I know this because I did the opposite, okay, for so long, then you stay pretty motivated, right?
When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
Ooh, That's a question for my husband. how do I calm myself down? Well, I do a lot of yoga, so you would think I would be an expert in my deep breathing pranayama. But I've learned to walk away, okay? And it's still a work in progress. I've learned to walk away, and sometimes it's really hard to control all the chatter in your mind. I have learned not to react right away and to let go of some things. A lot of things, actually. I used to react to everything, and it was just exhausting. Like if the system goes down, and if it's a service provider, and I'm paying them, and it goes down, I'm just like, okay, no problem. It happens. And I actually think that meditation is finally having some effect on me. So because I've been a difficult student of meditation, not medication, because I'm totally against that. I do not medicate. But anyway, meditation. So. And then, you know, my husband, I mean, I have a great marriage. We're about to celebrate 10 years, and it's an amazing friendship. And he's there for me, so I go to him when things go wrong, and he gives me perspective. So that helps a lot. Yeah.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
So many. How much time do we have? I do have a challenge with my mom right now, and I won't get into specifics out of respect for both of us, but it's been a really, really tough challenge. And I'm actually going through a coaching program myself, and I asked the coach about this, and it's a real challenge because I really want to fix her as she does me. And I have to look at myself and look at the things I need to do and how our relationship is going to go forward. And it's really, really, really testing me in ways I didn't anticipate because it was so sudden. But it's like those things where things have been waiting to happen and then one day they do happen. Like you reach a point where you just go over the edge and you just jump and you realize it's been building up all that time. So it's really, really hard to know what to do next. And I'm just trying to find some peace and figure out what's going to be best. But it's one of those things where you know things that you did are not going to work anymore. You have to start to look at things in a new way. So that's my current big challenge.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through your challenges?
Well, the coaching program that I mentioned to you, that's been really, really helpful because it helps a lot with a mindset, which has been huge for me. And it's not just reading about it, you know, it's actually doing it, actually shifting the way you think and you see things and practicing it and setting intentions throughout the day to where you really, really focus on what matters and you watch where your energy goes. So all of that has really helped me. Because energy is really, really important. And if you, and we don't realize how much energy things take. But if you really, really look at where your energy goes, I think that's been really, really helpful.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say?
I would say, congratulations. You know, this is a big step. If you've come all the way, you've finished college. I would say, don't be so attached to your education and to practicing what you studied that you dismiss opportunities, that you dismiss your dreams and your passions. I think there is ways you can use and adapt and just, you know, kind of like clay, you can adapt your education to your new path. It doesn't have to be very strict. And some professions maybe, like maybe the medical profession, but in general, a lawyer can become an artist. I can see it. I can totally see that happening if there is certain things at play, like there is the talent and there is the underlying passion. So I think it's really important not to be married to your education and also to not give up your dreams for lusting after comfort, if you will. Right? Because we do that. We become comfortable and then more comfortable and then we become complacent and then we forget what we're doing. You know, we forget why we are doing our job or what it is we want to do and we forget what it is we love to do. So don't let that happen to you because it's really tough when it happens to you in your 30s and then you feel more lost. So just kind of get that out of the way and be conscious about your choices, you know?
My last question is to help me get better at this process. Is there a question I didn't ask that I should have or something you wanted to say but haven't?
Well, I think you asked a lot of good questions. I really think we covered a lot of ground. I think one thing I'd like to say is it's okay not to know, right? A lot of people get so frustrated not knowing what it is they want to do or not knowing what it is they're meant to do and they feel lost and confused. And I felt that way too. But I think it's important to be searching, give patience to it. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. As long as you have that awareness that you are going in a direction that is meaningful to you and you're just trying things out and experimenting and not giving up, I think it's really important to be okay with not knowing and to just continue to search for it. So don't get frustrated with yourself and please don't give up. Like it took me only, 10 years or so to find out what it is I love to do and I was meant to do, and that's okay. So I would just say it's okay not to know.
I want to thank Farnoosh Brat for joining me today. Thanks, Farnoosh. I appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.